And good evening, everybody. Once again, welcome to another Hoops HD preseason college basketball video podcast. Tonight's episode, the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by what's become our usual cast of characters this season. Let's run through, quickly introduce everybody. First of all, beginning to my left, to your right, John Titel first. John, how are you tonight?
Very good. Season starts in 10 days. I can't wait.
10 days, we're on the countdown. We also have John S. with us tonight again. John, our other John, how are you? How are things going out there in Big Ten country, or Big East country, I guess?
Or the gateway to the SEC, as I've also mentioned before. But so far, doing pretty well.
Actually, I guess you're also American Athletic Conference country, too, with Cincinnati. I was just watching some of their exhibition game tonight with a thoroughly dismantled brand. Probably pretty much.
Wow.
Also have with us Joby Fortson, coming to us, our ACC guy who's stepping out of his territory here into the Big 12. Joby, how are you there?
Doing well. I did grow up in Big 12 territory, so I have at least some familiarity.
All right, so we've got a few Big 12 ties here. And, of course, I don't think he needs any introduction at all, but the drinker there of some type of alcoholic beverages and a huge fan of a certain classic Big 12 and Big 8 rivalry, David Griggs. David, how are you?
I'd be better if Missouri was still in this conference. Missouri would not be better. Well, I don't know.
The conference would not be better. But
notice how good the conference has been since Missouri left.
And that's really the place we want to start with the Big 12. 2 years in a row, the Big 12 has put 70% of its conference, 7 out of 10 teams, into the NCAA tournament. No other conference has ever put 70% or more into the NCAA tournament before this. Talk about the strength of a conference in terms of regular season play, at least. I think the Big 12 may be the best conference out there the last couple of years, and the question is that something people agree with or don't agree with? Let's throw that out there generally.
I actually do agree with it. I realize it is an alarming stat that it's been since 2012, since they had a team get past the Sweet 16. I'm not going to say that you can just completely ignore that, but I do think that people overreact to the NCAA tournament a little bit when measuring the strength of a specific team or a specific conference. I think when you have an 11 or a 12 seed that goes a couple rounds in, everybody's like, oh my God, what a great team, and they'll start off ranking that team really high the next year when in reality they just had a good couple games. And on the flip side, like what we said with Villanova, I think people are dismissing the Big 12 a little bit because of what's happened the last couple of years and that they haven't got teams back. But Iowa State was a really good team last year. Baylor was really good. Kansas was really good. I mean, this is a team that had 5 protected seeds, like 5 teams seeded 5th or better. That is remarkable. I think that trumps early exits in the NCAA tournament because, as the cliche goes, anything can happen on any given day.
Well, I guess that is the question here, though. I mean, do you have to count this pretty much a fail by the Big 12 Conference the last 3 years of the NCAA tournament against them somewhat when you grade them as a conference over this time period? Let me throw it over to John T. What do you think about how you'd actually grade the Big 12 overall the last couple of years with incredible regular seasons followed by pretty lousy tournaments?
No, I think that's a very fair point because obviously, you can go undefeated in the regular season like a certain Wildcat team did last year. But you don't win it all, you don't win it all. Not that they have not had success in March in the past, but March is where you make your legacy and determine the future and stuff. And like David said, I think the top of the conference is stacked. I think the middle of the conference really elevates it among the best in the country. When you look at a team, the second-tier teams like a West Virginia, a Kansas State, and Oklahoma State, those are dangerous teams who can win games in March. They don't always, but they can. I don't know if you can say that about most conferences around the nation.
And let me throw it over to John S. here. Do you think that this is a factor of the Big Big 12 being a relatively small conference by today's standards with only 10 teams. I guess there was a day when that was actually the larger conference, but today's standards, that's a small conference. And is keeping that conference in such a tight, compact group as opposed to throwing out there to 14 or 15 teams, in fact, help elevate this conference into what it's become?
Well, we hit on this a few nights ago when we did the Big East Conference. They're another 10-team conference that does the true round robin. You have to wonder if some of these teams probably are a little more physically fatigued, facing each other twice and in some cases three different times. But overall, the Big 12 has done a little bit better than the Big East, not just in terms of how many units they're accruing for their conference, but also getting some better picks in the NBA draft.
Yeah. Let me ask something to our numbers guy, Joby, who does the rankings. Does the double round robin push a league up when so few conferences do it now because you play everybody twice? So, you know, the old trick, whatever you've done out of conference, it's like you get the benefit of it twice. Numbers-wise, is that elevated in the Big 12?
You do if you have a pretty deep conference like the Big 12. TCU last year was the only drag. If you go to other conferences, let's take the ACC. You had Georgia Tech and Boston College. Down the line, there are more dregs as a percentage of the conference. That's a credit to the Big 12. But by the same token, hey, Texas Tech, Kansas State, you're not bad. You elevate them a little bit too much. I actually do think their numbers are a little bit inflated. It's only one game, but look what happened in early in the season at a conference in the classic Kansas-Kentucky showdown. Kentucky just rolled them. Now, Kentucky rolled a lot of people, but March does count, I do think, for a lot. Not everything, but it does count for a lot. The fact this has gone several years now, the way they've done it, there's something wrong. I mean, one year you can throw off to the side. Two, you could say, oh, that's unusual. We're getting to the point where these teams don't advance. And the fact is, I never have faith in my own brackets that Baylor's going to advance because of their style of play. I truly believe that they need – there are teams, obviously Kansas has the potential. But I think they are a little bit bloated by the numbers, given they don't have the number of RPI poison that is a term that's often used. They don't have that.
Right. Well, I guess, and not to turn this into math class, because I guess I could look at this and figure it out for myself. The Big East also plays a double round robin, and they have the same issue. They got six teams in. Only one team gets past the round of 32. Does the double round robin bloat a team's conference numbers on paper more so than a conference that doesn't do that?
Anyway. Once again, it's up to it's the level. It's what are teams in a 10-team league, what are teams 6 through 10 looking like? In the Big 12, to their credit, it's deep. It's a deep conference in that every team but one is an NIT at least level team. That's really good. But in so doing, Kansas, Iowa State from last year, Baylor, you should beat Kansas State and sometimes they don't, but you should win that 70, 80, even maybe in the case of Kansas, 90% of the time. So your numbers move up. If they were playing with the same win percentage, Boston College, go to the ACC, their numbers wouldn't look as good. Virginia Tech, their numbers wouldn't look as good.
It also helps if you're winning at a conference like the Big East and the Big 12 did last year. Let's also keep in mind that this is an under the radar conference, the Sun Belt. They play a 20-game round robin, but quite in the same class as the other two conferences that we mentioned.
Well, yeah, we're going to be getting to the Sun Belt schedule in a future podcast, but yeah, that's something that I think is I think Dave and I both agree is just too many games in conference. But let's actually try to turn to the actual teams here in the Big 12 as we it's supposed
good,
to
good idea
generally. But and we've already mentioned Kansas a few times. I don't know that anybody who's going to necessarily disagree that Kansas is going to be again our odds-on favorite, at least, to win the Big 12. They've won 11 or tied for 11 consecutive Big 12 regular season championships. So this is their going for their 12th this year, and another just really impressive lineup heading into the season. Although we're still having eligibility issues have not been cleared up for Diallo, one of maybe the top incoming freshman in the conference. Let me throw it over to John T. here. John, what do you think about this Kansas team this year? First of all, to not only win the Big 12, but to be a legitimate Final Four contender.
They certainly are. Their schedule is brutal. I'll let somebody else handle the schedule in the minutes ahead. But the lineup's solid. Perry Ellis is a former McDonald's All-American. Wayne Selden Jr., former McDonald's All-American. Frank Mason running the point. They're bringing in Diallo, if eligible, as well as Carlton Bragg, another great freshman. And like you said, three things, death, taxes, and rock chalk. I mean, the team is going to probably win the conference because that's all they do.
I think that Diallo eligibility thing is starting to get a little bit interesting because every other major freshman with eligibility issues has been cleared to play at this point. The guy from Purdue.
What's his issue?
Swanigan?
Yeah. What's the do we know what the issue is?
With what Diallo's issue is, it has to do with, again, you know, certain teams that he may or may not have played for, and those type of things. Type of thing that the NCAA seems to clear everybody for eventually. They just like to drag it out. Kansas does have an exhibition game coming up Wednesday, November 4th, he's probably not going to play in that game because of these issues, but... I suspect he'll get cleared by the end of the beginning of the season, but you know, we'll wait and see on that. Let me throw it over to our schedule expert here because we do want to discuss Kansas' schedule. Let me throw over to bring John S. in here about this Kansas schedule. Can you throw out some of these games at us that they're going to have and just how tough of a gauntlet they're going to have to run here?
Well, they still have the series with, what is it, Michigan State, Duke, and Kentucky, but this year they get Michigan State as part of the schedule rotation.
That was just a Final Four team from last year, no big deal.
Yeah. And then we've already discussed they're going to the Maui Invitational. They go to San Diego State. They play Oregon State on a neutral floor, and this year they also play Kentucky at home as part of the SEC Big 12 Challenge. I know the puppet wanted a certain team next door, but I think you'll be happy with Kansas and Kentucky instead.
Yeah, and just throw out there, in Maui, they're likely to have a semifinal game against UCLA and either a Vanderbilt or an Indiana in the finals, in the final round. So that's going to be a couple more really tough games. Well, they do play Chaminade in the first game.
But it doesn't count against them in the RPI.
Yeah, I want to be mad at Kansas for avoiding teams and not scheduling people because there's two in particular, and one very much in particular that I'd like to see on the schedule, but you can't really blame them for that when they go out and schedule the way that they do. Missouri-Kansas, I think, was one of the best rivalries. It goes back to I'm a history buff. I love that it was the Tigers and the Jayhawks, and that they've played every year in every sport since 1890. But the other team that you'd like to see them play against is Wichita State, who they just they'll play anybody but those two.
Then obviously they did have to play Wichita State last year and it didn't quite work out in the tournament for them.
I don't know. I think those would be games of very high intrigue, particularly maybe Wichita State even more so now.
When we're talking the Big 12 beyond Kansas, we've got two brand new head coaches coming into the Big 12 this year, and each one having a lot of stories with him. Let's start with maybe the lesser of the two stories, considering the name and the other one, but let's start over in Iowa State, where Fred Hoiberg took off from the NBA, Steve Prohm coming in from Murray State, and coming into an absolutely loaded team that makes you almost shake your head why Hoiberg didn't wait one more year. Joby, let me throw this over to you here. What are your thoughts about this Iowa State team, and can Steve Prohm have the type of success that Hoiberg did, at least regular season-wise?
That is, Joby just is knocking it out of the park right now. Just
Joby's not going to answer. So, David, what, you want to take it for him?
What was the question? I wasn't paying attention.
It must have been a pretty tough one to knock Joby out.
Yeah.
It was about Steve Prohm and what your thoughts are about him coming into Iowa State.
I like him. Now, again, he did very well at Murray State. Now, again, Murray State was a good program before he got there, and he sustained the success. But that's important because building a program and then sustaining building a program that's not successful and the one that is, and sustaining a program that's already successful, I think are two different skill sets. The thing about Iowa State is that you're doing it on a much higher level and a much higher profile. He's never had these kinds of players. He's never played against this strong of competition. In fact, last year I don't think Murray State played, but was it three or four games against top 100 teams. So I could see there being a learning curve, but as far as his personnel, this is a very, very solid Iowa State team. I'm actually kind of sad to see Fred Hoiberg go. I think that he did exceptionally well there. They were sort of mediocre middle of the pack, if that, when he first got there, and he turned them into a really solid top 10 caliber program, really. Back-to-back Big 12 tournament championships, back-to-back three seeds. I know that it ended early for them last year, but they were in the Sweet 16 the year before that. You really liked them a lot more than that had it not been for injuries. I don't think he'll be as good as Hoiberg, but I mean that as more praising towards Hoiberg than I do criticism towards Prohm. Steve Prohm did do very well at Murray State.
Well, this roster that he comes in, though, is that this team is loaded with Monte Morris, Jameel McKay, George Niang, well, it used to be Naz Long. He's now going by Nazareth Mitru Long. But you add in Marquette transfer, Deontay Burton, Hallis Cook from Oregon State. There's just so many pieces this team has.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be – well, Joby, I think you're back. Let me throw it over to you here. How good is this Iowa State team? Can they dethrone Kansas?
I think certainly they can. There are a number of teams that actually can make a run at Kansas. I actually have one in my back pocket that I think will, not Iowa State. But I think it's what I heard the tail end of what David was talking about. Hoiberg was a special coach. There is a lot of talent there. Was the talent, did the talent show itself because of Hoiberg, or did Hoiberg do an excellent job, Pat Riley style, so to speak, of making the talent, you know, and maximizing it, what was already there? I don't know. That's what we're going to have to find out. Also, the turnover, you know, I do like, you know, I like the addition of Cook and some of the other transfer components. And, you know, this isn't Murray State, but he's a good coach. So we'll see. I don't think they will, but they'll make a run at it.
Well, we have another new coach in the Big 12 this year. It was a little bit of a headline. Shaka Smart finally moving on from VCU and taking the Texas job. And the question is, how quickly does this become Shaka's team, and how quickly does he make this team – well, I guess how high this team can rise under him and how quickly they will. Let me bring John S. back into it. John, what's your thoughts on this Texas team heading into the season with now under Shaka Smart and his, I guess, his mayhem system here?
Oh, that's what they're calling it now, since I guess Havoc is still trademarked over at VCU. I mean, it's not like he's going to be completely walking into a helpless situation. Texas did creep into the NCAA tournament last year, and they do have some talented freshmen coming in. But their tests early on are going to be coming in Atlantis, where they actually start against their historic rival, Texas A&M.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yep. And then they also have Carolina, UConn, and Vanderbilt at home, and a rematch at Stanford later in the year. So it's looking like a classic VCU schedule, or out of conference at least.
Well, let me bring our other John and John T. And again, with that same issue here of, you know, just how good will Texas be in his first year? Or is it going to take him a couple of years here?
I think I'll echo John S. It's going to take them a couple years because that schedule that he just mentioned, it is, along with Kansas, I think one of the hardest in the country. Much like prom at Iowa State, I think that Shaka has a similar situation in terms of a guy who became a head coach for the first time in the past 4, 5, 6 years and then proceeded to dominate. Prom dominated his conference. I believe he won it 4 times in 4 years. Shaka's won, it seems like, 25-plus games every single year for the 6 years he was at VCU. And now, instead of getting a VCU-caliber player, obviously he likes to fit his Havoc system. He comes to Texas. He gets a 6'10 forward in Connor Lammer, a 6'11 center in Prince Ibe, a 6'10 center in Cameron Ridley, who are all seniors. He's got veterans and height. I don't know how that fits with Havoc, and I don't know if he's going to make them fit his system or tweak his system to fit his talent. But eventually he is going to win just because he's such a great coach, and now he has such great players to match his ability.
David, I know you're dying to talk about that matchup that John S. mentioned there, the Texas A&M. We finally get that matchup. It came close in football a couple times recently with some bowl games, but we finally get it.
Yeah. I'm excited for that, too, and I love what John T. said about again, because that's the big question I have this year. I think Shaka Smart is a very good coach, and the team he'll have on the floor in 2 or 3 years will be ranked in the teens or better fairly regularly. I thought they hit a home run when they got him. But basketball at Texas, it's just funny to me that Texas and Texas A&M would sit around and they're like, we need some intriguing out-of-conference games. You know, our arena's half empty, and we can't seem to get people in here. Who could we schedule that's interesting? And yet they refuse to schedule each other. So we finally get it, but we get it in Atlantis in a ballroom, I think, and we get it over Thanksgiving. I'm glad they're playing. I'm excited they're playing, but it's not the same as if this were an on-campus event, a regular home-and-home, which, quite frankly, it should be. I think it should be in both sports, but we're just...
It's also the day before Thanksgiving, but
excuse me,
the day before Thanksgiving. Not going to involve bonfire this time.
Yeah.
Joby, I know you know a little bit about Shaka, and you were holding it to
me
in that
pocket. And you got to remember, David.
Else.
What's that?
No, that I was definitely... not holding Texas in my back pocket. I'm holding Oklahoma in my back pocket. They are my pick to win the Big 12. I'm going to go on record and say Oklahoma is loaded, and people aren't paying attention. Yeah, you're returning some. They lost Thomas, but they are returning leading scorers, Spangler. They are something to bear here, and I'm dead serious when I say the Sooners could be the ones to dethrone the Jayhawks.
Wow.
Silence.
Yes.
You got to take chances. I'm going out.
I like Oklahoma. I don't like them as much as even the polls do. I think they're top 10 in both polls. I'm not that big on them. I think maybe they're top 15, top 20. But two line, I don't know. If they do what you say, Joby, they're on the one line. Most likely.
I agree. They could easily be at the one line. Easily. That's how you got to take some teams. You can't just say, oh, North Carolina, the AP has them ranked. I think I'll put them there. Oh, Duke, they're ranked there. Oh, Kansas, Virginia, whoever you trot out. Villanova. You got to take chances. Who's going to surprise you as a team on the one line? This nationwide is my pick.
Wow. John T., what do you think about Oklahoma? We lost Chad, so this is our chance to talk about him while he's gone.
Sure. I agree with Joby 100%. Well, I agree with Joby 99%. I still think Kansas is going to win the conference because, like I said, that's all they do. But Oklahoma is legit. I actually wish I was here last year because I had actually predicted last year that Oklahoma was an Elite Eight team, and I got laughed out of my previous podcast, and they came this close. They lost by 4 points to the Spartans in the Sweet 16. Buddy Hield is not just a good player. He was in the third-team All-American last year and the Conference Player of the Year. If Georgia's Niang doesn't catch him this year, I think Hield might repeat.
Yeah, his player of the year is coming back.
And he's got Woodard and Cousins in the backcourt. Spengler, front long. Kruger has plenty of tourney experience. He's won 16 games. He's been in the tourney 16 times. He knows how to get teams there and then win once he gets there. I don't know if they can win over Kansas in the regular season or make it to the Final Four, but I think a top 10 ranking is actually very deserved. Their schedule also, I'll defer to John S. as always. I see Wisconsin, Villanova, LSU, Possibles. Like, those are all major great teams.
And then they also have Creighton at home. They go to Memphis, although I'll be castigated for mentioning them on this podcast for sure. And then they have the Diamond Head Invitational over Christmas. And also Oklahoma last year, they had what amounted to a road win during the tournament when they beat Dayton up in Columbus.
Yeah. And that was a tough game. Yeah. They had to fight for that one. So, but yeah, I mean, I like
Imagine
Oklahoma.
If Duke transferred the Duke transfer comes in, 7-foot guy comes in, is able, and Spengler is able to move to power.
Damn it, chance back.
Imagine if Spengler's able to move to power forward off the center block. I mean,
and now Joby's gone.
We seem to be having some technical issues here.
I thought it was a tag team match between Chad and Joby.
David, why don't you tell us where we are and get us moving here?
Well, I mean, when you left the room, we were talking about Oklahoma.
All right. So we've hit on Oklahoma. I guess the question out there would be, who else besides Oklahoma may be among the top leaders in this conference?
I still think you have to go with the Baylor Bears. I mean, they had a pretty good team last year, and they're still going to be returning part of their front court from last year, and Torian Prince and Rico Gathers. I actually had the chance to see Baylor in person last year in March, and for 36 minutes of the game, it looked like they were going to coast to an easy win over Georgia State, and suddenly they were just missing shots and foul shots left and right. And then a certain coach who will go unnamed just literally fell out of his seat as the pulled off the upset.
Yeah. Oh, it was wonderful. It's good Georgia State lost when they did. Otherwise, he may have decapitated himself. But that's the other thing we were talking about earlier. Like, the top of this league, you're looking 1-2 line. The middle of this league, you're still looking top 25. I mean, this is just such – I think Baylor's in the rankings easy. Texas is – I guess we got some question marks about them. But, yeah, I don't know if I think – I'm not going to go so far to say that I think Baylor will contend for the conference title, but it wouldn't shock me if they're contending for a protected seed of 5 or better. And – there was a 3-year period where they went to 2 Elite Eights in 3 years. They haven't really been back since, but they're pretty good. And what's amazing was how bad they were. I mean, all kinds of a mess when Scott Drew got there.
Well, Baylor's going to Waco's Finest Bakery this year as far as their schedule. Their only notable games are at Oregon and at Texas A&M, so realistically, they probably should go 11-2 out of conference.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's. I guess it's a little disappointing from Baylor.
So they're taking a lead from the football team, huh?
Yeah.
Another team that I kind of like this year, even though Juwan Staten is gone, is Bob Huggins' West Virginia team. And let me throw this over to John T. here on West Virginia. And especially defensively, they've won what I guess they call it the Press Virginia defense there. And will this 30-second shot clock help this team?
It will not, because I believe in addition to Staten, they lost their starting backcourt as a whole. So I think just it's going to be tough. They're fine in the front court. Devin Williams as a junior and Jonathan Holton as a senior. Holden had 11 boards in the loss to Kentucky in the Sweet 16 last year. He was just fantastic. Huggins, obviously one of the greatest coaches ever and the 2015 Conference Coach of the Year last year. Schedule looks brutal. I see San Diego State, Cal, Virginia, and Florida perhaps. That is just a recipe for disaster with a young backcourt. I don't like that at all.
I think the funniest thing you said there, John T., was a West Virginia player doing fantastic against Kentucky.
He was one of one that was fantastic against Kentucky. It was, wow. Oh. Was it 50-19 at one point? Yeah. So the last game West Virginia played, it didn't go so well, but they did have a good year last year.
Well, if we're not going to look at West Virginia, I guess the question is there somebody else in the conference? And Oklahoma State was in the tournament last year. I'm not that sold that they are necessarily a tournament team this year. But, David, do you like this Okie State team this year or no?
Not so much. I really think this is going to be a down year for the Big 12. I could see as few as six teams getting in this year, and I don't think Okie State is among them.
Well, let me throw it back over to Joby if we've got your technical issues resolved here. Below Oklahoma State, we have Tubby Smith, who's still trying to build something at Texas Tech. Do you think this is the year he starts to climb in the standings or no?
No, I think the tub has been drained, as our friends from Kentucky said a few years ago. I don't know if Tubby's got it going on.
All right, we're still in trouble with Joby's
yeah. Eighth or ninth, and that's not half bad.
Well, John, maybe you want to fill us in a little on Texas Tech as well here. We seem to have lost Joby again.
Yeah, their schedule is going to include a trip to the Puerto Rico tip-off, but they're not going to be one of the featured teams in there. But other than that, their schedule is fairly pedestrian. They get a home game against Richmond. They go to Arkansas as part of the Big 12 and SEC challenge, but that's about it.
Well, let me throw it back over to John T. then. You said you didn't really like this West Virginia team this year. Do you think there's still six teams that get in from the Big 12, and who would be the sixth if not West Virginia?
I will be setting the over-under at 5. Okay. I think Iowa State, Kansas, and Oklahoma are slam dunks. I think Baylor can, and I really think Texas can, and if they do, like, Shaka knows how to win in March, so I would not see them as a one-and-done. They could be like a three-and-done.
That'd be something.
I think 7 teams is impossible, and 6, like David said, it's a down year. I'm gonna say 5.
All right. Well, we do have 2 teams at the bottom of the Big 12 we have not discussed yet. One of them is TCU. Had a great non-conference schedule season last year.
They didn't have a great schedule, which is why they won their games.
But David, how about TCU this year? Can they do it again?
Finish last. Yes, they have it in them. I mean, K-State's going to give them a run for their money. I actually thought that as much as it irritated us that TCU was in the top 25 and in December everybody was talking about how great they were, I don't think it was entirely stupid to do that because it generated electricity around a program that has had absolutely none ever since I can remember. I mean, I think it's been since Billy Tubbs was the coach there that they had any sort of interest in that program at all. So even if they went to the bakery and ate up 13 cupcakes, at least they got themselves into the rankings and had some sort of spotlight on them for a little bit, even if it was fool's gold. Having said that, I still think that ninth is their ceiling. They've got a ways to go.
Now, these bracketologists you're talking about, David, were these the same ones that had DePaul as the Big East champion back in January last year?
Probably. Well, the reason they did that, and we all know that, is DePaul was the first place team. So, I mean, I guess they were just looking at that. But no, TCU was in the rankings. They were ranked 25th or 24th, weren't they? I mean, it was the coaches and the writers that were voting them that high.
Well, that's and because the people that saw them as being undefeated without going any further. But let's talk about the very last team here, the team that I'm picking dead last even behind TCU this year. And that's Kansas State. although the team was kind of near the bubble at portions into February last year, they fell apart at the end of the season, had a losing record, and pretty much everybody from that team is now gone. They don't really bring much back at all. And could we be nearing the end of the Bruce Weber era at Kansas State is the question.
Yes.
Okay. Let me go to John T. because I've never heard your. I've been very outspoken that I think that Bruce Weber's success has been winning with players that other people recruited, and I think that's kind of been his MO. And I think that's what happened in Illinois. I think that's what's been what happened in his first few years at Kansas State. What is your thoughts on him as a head coach?
I agree with your point, but like he was the national coach of the year 10 years ago at Illinois, and even if he did it with somebody else's players,
Phil Self's players, yes.
Still gonna get him out there, and you still gotta ruin Arizona's season in the Elite Eight. You gotta. I mean, I believe he set a school record for wins and was the national runner-up. So even with Self's players, he was great. 2 years ago, in 2013, he was the conference coach of the year at Kansas State. But oh, how the mighty have fallen. I don't know how hot the seat is, but I think I see North Carolina as a possibility on his schedule, and that is going to be a long, long night.
That could be an ugly one. Let's turn away from the teams themselves and I want to keep with you, John T. here. Who do you feel is the best player in the conference here in the Big 12 this season?
I really think it's a two-man race between last year's conference player of the year, Buddy Hield from Oklahoma, and last year's conference tourney MVP, George Niang at Iowa State. They were each third-team All-Americans. They're each coming back. I believe most of the other All-Americans, first, second, and third team, went pro, as they often do because that's where the money is and they maxed out their talent and stuff. So I think Niang and Hield, it's going to be wire to wire, and they're both great players. So I could even see it being a co-player of the year situation, perhaps.
Yeah, my money would probably be on Niang. I just think that he's that good of a player. But I think we have Joby back.
Yeah.
Are you back, Joby? First of all, and second of all, any yes. thoughts on the on either player of the year or the bottom of the Big 12 here?
Well, nine. Yeah, I think the Weber bashing was sufficient to get that out of the way.
Yeah, it was for Kansas State. What are we supposed to do?
But and by the way, if you have both Kansas State and TCU as dregs, that will hurt the entire Big 12, as we discussed at the top of the show from a numbers perspective. But I think John T. nailed it. I think Yang wins. One, because Buddy Hield won it last year, so there's a little bit of a, well, let's give it to the other guys really close this year instead of a repeat. Plus, you're going to be splitting votes because Spangler's sitting in Norman as well, and they do make this unexpected run that I've claimed they'll get attention, but more players than just Buddy Hield will be getting attention.
Well, on that note, I think that covers pretty much all the teams in the Big 12. And let's just run through if anybody has any final thoughts. Let's stick with you, Joby. Any other final thoughts about the Big 12?
Put your money on the Sooners. Let's go to Vegas and check out those odds right now.
And John S., how about you?
Yeah, I think we're looking at about six bids for the conference this year, and there could be one team that's able to sneak into the NCAA tournament, even with a sub-500 conference record. And I'm looking right at you, Oklahoma State.
Oh, Oklahoma State. Okay. John T., any final thoughts on the Big 12?
I've not seen Chick Diallo play in person for Kansas. If he can become eligible, I've heard he's good enough that he could move them from like a Sweet 16 to a Final Four team. So I think that's going to be Kansas's biggest problem all year.
And Mr. Griggs?
Overall, I love this conference. I don't like it as much as I did before some of the alignment changes, but it's still it's a 10-team league. They can call it the Big 12 all day long. I realize that if they may look to expand for football reasons someday, but I love the true double round robin. I love the rivalries in this league. That you have the Bedlam. It's just a great conference, and as much as I'd like to swap TCU and West Virginia out and get Nebraska and and get Texas A&M and Mizzou back in it, it's still a great league. It's still a fun league. Basketball-wise, I think it's the best one. But we need Kansas and Missouri back.
Yeah. Just my final thought here, as I guess we're running out of time because I'm hearing a clock ticking in my ears, but my final thought here on the Big 12 is I really like this Kansas team, and I'm going to assume that Diallo is going to get eligible. And Well, it's tough to pick a Big 12 team in the Final Four. I'm pretty certain that Kansas will be one of my Final Four picks as we head into the season here.
Wow.
Keep an eye on this Texas team, though, especially if Steve Prime has trouble, getting this Iowa State team into his system. I just think Shaka's that good of a coach that he'll find a way to win no matter who he puts out there on the floor. But on that note, for myself, Joby, both Johns and David, thanks for joining us. We'll be back again real soon with our next preseason podcast.
Chad Sherwood, ladies and gentlemen, after hours of research, he likes Kansas.